Welcome to the Prison Pod, a podcast for all people experiencing incarceration. The mission of this podcast is to save lives, restore hope, reduce suffering, and recidivism. Many show ideas come directly from the listeners, so please write the host. Prison Pod, Post Office Box 294, Orono, Maine, 04473. Here is your host, Ms. Valerie.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Prison Pod. We have a great guest joining us today. We have Noah Asher, and he's going to talk about his brand new book just hitting the shelves called Chaos, Overcoming the Overwhelming. I'm going to start right off and ask you, Noah, to say a quick hello, and then if you would share a little bit of background info.
Hey, guys. I'm very excited to be here. This podcast is super, super important. Just to let people know that there's hope out there. There's a way forward. And so I'm excited to be on this podcast. A little bit about myself. I was incarcerated. It all started, my chaos kind of all started a little over 10 years ago. And since getting out, I've been able to start my own business. And now I'm a published author. So I'm very excited.
So what is it that you are doing for a business?
I actually have a consulting business. When I first got out of prison, I went to a hotel, a very popular and familiar chain hotel, and I took a front desk job. And within 3 weeks, they ended up making me the GM. And I knew nothing about hotels. I was like, this is going to be interesting. So it was a lot of trial and error type things. And after being with the company for a long time, I moved up into operations and things like that. And after that, I just realized I could be doing something on my own, making up my own hours, not having to drive as much, and focusing on some philanthropy type work that I wanted to do. And so I started my own business doing consulting. I do a lot of undercover assessments is what we call them, but it's kind of like secret shopping. So we go into these restaurants and stores, and we actually go undercover and we create an assessment based on what we see and what we don't see, and relay that back to the ownership a few days later after we create the assessment. And sometimes we're brought in afterwards to really work with the team and show them how they can improve.
It sounds like it might be kind of a fun job too, and not boring because it's something different every day.
Yes, and I love to eat, so I love when I get to do the the restaurant ones for sure.
I bet, yeah. And do you do other products too? Or is it all businesses?
It's all businesses right now. We do mainly restaurants just because that's who's looking for those sorts of assessments more than anything. Most chain hotels do something similar already. But what's great about offering a service like this is it allows us to be a third party. So we're not biased by any means. There's no reason for us to lie or make something up.
So now your writing career, how did you begin with writing? I know a lot of people while they're inside, the last thing they want to do is write a letter.
Right.
And there's other people, that's how it gets them writing. And then there's some people that journal. So I'm always curious how somebody starts being a writer, because I've dabbled a little myself.
Yeah. While locked up, I actually wrote letters. It's funny that you said that, but I did write a bunch of letters to family and friends. And I would give them like a message of hope, like, hey, we're going to get through this. And really what it was my therapy. It was free therapy where I was really kind of writing to myself like, hey, dude, you're going to get through this. I needed to hear that over and over again while locked up and know that there was there was a future for me. And so I kept writing about that. And then finally I was like, you know what? There's something here. There's something in this. And so I started kind of working out different things. I started piecing together and kind of organizing it while locked up, actually. And once I got out, when you get out, if anyone's listening to this and they've gotten out of prison, they understand this, but that's when you think your life is in chaos when you're locked up. When you get out, that's when you're like, just things start happening. You're going and going and going and trying to make life work and rebuild. And so then life gets chaotic, but in a different way and sometimes a better way, because you are hanging out in the free world and you're able to do different things. And so I sat on it for a while, but I was glad I did, because in the book, we talk about how chaos comes in the form of like storms and battles. We use that metaphor throughout. And I would say that there's three sections of the book. The first is preparing for battle, preparing for storms that come our way. And then the second section of the book is in the midst. And it's like, okay, while I'm sitting behind these walls, how do I find purpose in my pain? And then the third section of the book is called the aftermath. And that's really like after the storm dissipates and the enemy retreats, what are we to do to rebuild our life properly? And I would say I'm glad I sat on that, because I could not write about the aftermath until I was in the aftermath. And I sat on it for a little while, and I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad I did, but it taught me even more principles of what I learned through that process.
So we talked a little before we started recording, but I want to bring something up now. What was it that kept you going inside? Where was your hope coming from? Did you have a spiritual base when you went in? Is that something that you seeked, or could you talk a little about that?
Yeah, it's something like I've believed in Jesus for a long time, and what really got me was I was really using Jesus though as like a genie in a bottle. I thought if I said the right things or did the right things, I could just pray for something and it would happen. And as I sat locked up and I realized, okay, that's not how Jesus works. Like, I'm praying and I'm still locked up. So that wish was not granted. And then I kind of realized that's not how it works. And I got to a really dark place while locked up. And for anyone listening who's struggled with depression, this may be a little deep or dark for you to hear right now, but I got to such a bad place that I put a sheet around my neck and like try to, you know, cut off my airways. And I just prayed, like, God, if you love me, you won't want me to be in pain anymore. So like, please let me come home, like to you, not even just like home to a physical home, but like come home to you, God. And I sat there and I just kept praying that over and over again, and it didn't happen. And then I got mad with myself, because I'm like, well, I'm already feeling bad about my situation, and now I feel bad that I couldn't even end my life properly. And then I was mad at God for not letting me end my life properly.
But you were getting an answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's so interesting about faith and belief, because you were asking for something and you weren't getting what you wanted, but it wasn't your time because you had work still to do.
Right.
So now you're out here doing something really important. And, you know, so there was an intervention there, whether you were.
Yeah. And actually, not to sound too preachy for a minute, but I'll say that one of the things that really hit in this book is how Joseph in the Bible, his life went from pit to prison to a palace. But I think all the time about while he was in the pit, like, how many times, I'm sure he prayed, we don't read it in scripture, but I'm sure he prayed at times like, God, give me a ladder. That's all I want is a ladder to get out of here. And God didn't provide a ladder. And if I were Joseph, I'd be like, God, do you not hear me? Do you not care about me? I need a ladder so I can be free from this. And if Joseph would have gotten a ladder in that moment to have that quick fix, then later on in his journey, 13 years of later of his life, he would have never experienced the palace and helping a whole generation of people get free and be set free. And so I think a lot of times we look for that quick fix and we want that ladder right now. But if we get that ladder right now, what ends up happening is it loses the bigger blessing down the road. And I think for me, it was, yeah, not having my life end in that moment, because my purpose was not over.
So after this happened, I don't mean to make lightly of this at all, but I was just thinking about that. After this experience, you are sitting there and you say, okay, well, this didn't happen. Did you have the aha moment that maybe it wasn't meant to happen?
I wish. I stayed in such a deep, dark place for so long. Do you remember the show Winnie the Pooh? And Eeyore, right? And I talk about this in my book. I call it Eeyore syndrome, and how it's like, there's always a cloud over me. Woe is me. You know, this is horrible, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm thankful that I had great friends and family I could pick up the phone and call while I was locked up. But I'm even more grateful when I think back of those conversations and how, if I were them, I would probably roll my eyes being like, oh man, I do not want to talk to him right now. And what I mean by that is, so many times when I called my parents and they were out to eat or something, it'd be like, oh, I wish I was eating. I wish I was eating steak, you know, or I wish this was happening. And it's like, I was making them feel bad. Like I was, you know, like Eeyore does, right? And I think Winnie the Pooh, I commend Winnie the Pooh for putting up with Eeyore, and because it's like, gosh, I would either run from Eeyore, or I'd pop the dude a Prozac, because it's like, this dude has the worst mindset ever. And I had to really change my mindset from going, okay, why me, why me, why me, to God, use me, use me, use me. And when that switched in my brain and in my heart, because it has to be both, it has to be the brain and the heart. When that switched, that's when I could really start to say, okay, there's purpose in my pain, and I'm going to find it and I'm going to use it.
You know, and it's really hard when you're in that space, because you don't see a way out of it. And, you know, one thing is starting something, whether it's you get up every morning and you say, I stood up and I got out of bed.
Yes.
I'm wonderful because I did that. And if that's all you do all day long, you did that one thing.
Oh, you're speaking my language, Valerie. You're speaking my language. I tell people that all the time. I've done so many interviews already for this book. And a lot of times at the end of the interview, they'll say, what's one thing you want to just tell the audience? And I would say that that's the number one thing I like to tell people is, listen, overcoming the overwhelming doesn't have to be some big gesture. It doesn't have to be, oh, you went from prisoner to published author. If you do that, great. But if you get out of bed today and you get dressed and you brush your teeth and you'd say, today, I'm going to circle. If you're locked up and you know what I'm talking about, like circling the yard or circling the room, doing that is the start of overcoming the overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, goals, people set goals that are very unattainable sometimes, you know, and if you like, this is something I learned. I have been on a weight loss journey. So when I was looking at losing 50 pounds, it was overwhelming.
Oh,
it was,
I bet.
Like,
yeah.
Oh my word, 50 pounds is so much weight. So somebody said, well, don't say 50 pounds, say 5.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
I'm going to lose 5 pounds. So then when you lose that 5 pounds, I'm going to lose 5 pounds. It seems so much more of an attainable goal at 5 pounds than 50 pounds.
I agree.
That's just like when somebody comes home, it's like, I got to find a place to stay. I got to get a job. I need to do this. I got to have, no, you need to slow down.
Right.
That's number one, you know?
Yeah. And I agree with that.
And set small steps, make it so you're successful. Tiny little goals and build on those. And what happens when that happens? With the chaos.
Yeah, we really then start to overcome the overwhelming when we do those little goals, because little goals all add up and they all stack up. And before you know it, if every goal is another step, before you know it, you've built a whole staircase to success. But it starts with one step. You can't just make a giant leap. And I'll say this, if it doesn't matter what sort of chaos someone is in, whether it is they're behind bars or if they're sitting in a hospital bed getting chemo, utilize your time when you're in the midst of this pain, because you can sit and sulk. You can sit and sulk all day long, but that is a wasted day. I'm working on a new book right now, and I actually just wrote down the line as of, you don't, this isn't a, your life is not a dress rehearsal. This is it. This is all you have. This isn't a practice for another day. Like, no, today's the day. And so if you're locked up and you feel like you have a gift to write, start writing now. If you want to, start creating a list like you were talking about of achievable goals. Okay. Today, you know what? I know I'm going to need a house when I get out. I know I'm going to need to figure out a job. Start working on those sorts of achievable goals now. Because this time should not be wasted. If you waste this time when you get out, I can attest, when you get out, life's going to be fastly moving. And if you waste this time now, you're going to really regret that later on.
Now, sometimes I forget this, so before I do forget it, I want to ask some questions about how people can get more information about you and how they can get the book.
Okay, great question. If you go to my website, it's thenoahasher.com, so T-H-E, Noah Asher, thenoahasher.com. You'll see all the links where you can buy it, which is Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Books A Million. If you're on a tablet or something, there's Apple, so pretty much everywhere. So that's pretty awesome. I'm very excited about that. But, you can also on the website, you're going to see my Instagram handle. I have a team that handles that for me. Very excited about, connecting with people on that as well. But, when you do purchase the book, we do provide copies. All of the proceeds for this book provides copies for prison libraries and rehab centers. When I was working with my publisher and getting this out there, they were like, you're going to get X amount of dollars per book. You're going to get this percentage for royalties. I was like, cool. That's not coming to me. So I don't really care. And that's something from day one I knew I wanted to do. Was because while locked up, I did a lot of reading, more reading than I've ever done. And I actually kept a piece of paper, and every time I finished a book, I'd write it down. And I have that piece of paper. It's like, I think it's like 2 or 3 pages front and back of all the books I read. And it's so important. And long story short, I like to just say that that's something I felt even locked up was, hey, if I ever write a book, I'm going to make sure prison libraries have it, because that's an opportunity to grow. You know, every day, like I said, don't waste this time. Use this time to grow. If anything else, if you can't do anything else, use this time to grow. Read. Learn something new.
Right up my alley. I'm always pushing people to read. And I even say, if you have a hard time reading, read children's books or comic books, anything.
Yeah.
Just to get that practice going.
Right.
Another question.
It's so funny. In my book, some of the reviews we've gotten is about how I will go kind of all over the place. It's structured. I don't mean I go all over the place, but what I mean is I will take something that I feel led to talk about, and I'll connect the dots between something in my personal life that I've experienced, or someone that I know, something that's happened in someone's life, or I'll relate it to something in history. Something like that happened with the story of Abraham Lincoln and what Abraham Lincoln went through with his depression. I'll go through that, but I learned a lot while locked up. So I'm using that history knowledge. I'm using the knowledge of biology while I was locked up. I read some stuff about science. So I take all of those different ologies and I point it back to theology is what I really try to do.
So back to books. I always like to ask people if they had a favorite book or if there was a book that really inspired them, and it could be fiction or fact.
Okay. So nonfiction, I would say there's an author named Mark Batterson. Oh, amazing. Amazing. He's the one who really taught me that all ologies kind of point back to theology. And so I love everything he writes. I quote him in my book. Since getting out, I've actually talked to some of his team. And so it's been really cool to, you know, he's a hero of mine to be able to talk to his team. So that's been really cool. And then I would say when it comes to fiction, oh, you can't go wrong with Harry Potter now. Like the whole Harry Potter series, they're long books. So if you're sitting, you have a lot of time on your hands, Harry Potter is the way to go. But you also kind of get lost in it. That's one thing that fiction, I wish I could write fiction. I just can't, but I just don't have that ability. I don't feel like, but one thing about fiction, it just takes you to a whole nother world. And that's what makes it fun.
It's funny you say that because I think fiction is extremely hard to write. It's different when you're writing something factual and you have research you can do and you have other people's work you can depend on.
Right.
But when you're trying to do fiction, you have to come up with all the characters and the stories and their emotions. And it's not like in a movie where you can see them crying. You have to explain it.
Yeah.
There's yeah. a lot to it.
Right. And then it's like, I've seen authors for fiction where they'll have pages around their office or studio where it'll say things like, okay, this character is going through this internally. And, you know, you have to have all this background knowledge of the characters you're creating. And I'm like, I'm out on that. I can't handle it. I don't know how to do it. But it would be something fun to do or try at least, I guess.
So are you going out doing any public speaking and promotions of the book and book signings or anything like that yet? And if you are, how do people who are interested from the media get in touch with you?
I've been doing like a podcast tour right now, and that will last throughout the rest of this month. And then starting at the end of February, the 1st of March, I'll be doing some events with Barnes & Noble, doing some book signings and meet the author type events. And you can find all that information on my website. And then I'd say that when it comes to press and things like that, one thing that I try to do is I have some team around me that works with me on this movement. And one thing we try to do is we try to connect with people that have like-minded goals, like you, Valerie. And so we work with people like that, but we also are, when I go to these different towns to do book signings, we're also connecting with rehab centers and addiction centers while like local to that area to see if we can connect and do some speaking engagements. I love that part of it too.
And how about the men and women inside? If they are looking in their library and they don't see your book, who should they go to and say, we want to have Noah's book in here. We really need it.
Yeah. You can email, us at it's chaos, which is CHAOS, overcomer, which is OVERCOMER. @gmail.com. So chaosovercomer@gmail.com. And just let us know that you haven't, your library doesn't have one, and we'll make sure that we make it priority. I think next week, I don't have that in front of me, but I think next week I'm actually getting to take a copy and have a conversation with the warden of the prison I was in all these years ago. And it's kind of a full circle moment. It's going to be very, very cool.
I really love that many people in corrections and Department of Justice are having people that have been impacted themselves by incarceration going back into the facilities. Even if they never speak to the people who are there, administration can learn so much.
Yes.
About coming home and also areas that could be improved. And if we don't talk to the people that are experiencing it firsthand, how can we make positive change for people that are coming back home into society?
Right. I was telling somebody the other day, even it's like, if I told somebody right now that's never experienced incarceration, it's like, hey, just go spend one night locked up, you know? And, tell me how you feel. But even that wouldn't do it justice, because you know that tomorrow you're going home. So while you physically may be able to experience, okay, this is what they're going to, they sleep on these hard mats, things like that, you can't truly understand the mental craziness of it all until you just don't know what tomorrow holds. And so it doesn't So basically what I'm getting at, it's impossible for someone to really learn unless they've been in the system. I call myself a chaos survivor, but I would say that when it comes to knowledge of chaos, I would say that I went to the school of hard knocks on chaos. I got a degree in it, and now I'm trying to use it to help others learn how to overcome their situation, because unless you've really been in the system, it's very, very hard to fathom what it feels like mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and of course, physically.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. Like I did 15 years of volunteer work, and I was in jails and prisons 4 or 5 days a week.
Wow.
So I always had that feeling when I left that, oh, I'm so thankful I'm walking out of here.
Yeah.
Because any one of us could be in that situation. You do not know what life events may come about that will bring you to a situation that may put you in there yourself. And
that's so true.
One thing that was the hardest for me when I first went in, I had dreams and I heard the gates closing. Mm. That clanging metal to metal. And I thought, if you hear that multiple times a day for 10 years, what the heck do you dream? If I'm dreaming it and I hear it only a few times.
Yeah.
The other thing was the smell. There's a smell in prison.
Yes.
That is, you can't describe it, but it's there. You know?
Right.
And
every once in a while, I'll be somewhere and some cleaning product they use or something like that, I'll get a little bit of a whiff and I'm like, oh, no, gotta go. For sure. It's definitely a scent about it that's unexplainable.
I have one other question I wanted to ask you. When you came home, did you have a support system coming home?
I did. And that's a good question. And I think that sometimes people, they ask that because they're like, well, we can't relate because you did have one and I didn't, you know, that sort of thing. I'm thankful I did. My mom and dad were amazing supporters for me while locked up. And then when I got out, and I'm very thankful for that. But I will say that I've worked and I've communicated with people who didn't have that structure. And I see how that can, not having that could really hurt someone. And that is why right now my team is working with some state senators in Georgia to provide a bill, bipartisan bill, where we make it mandatory for everyone to do the last 12 months of their sentence in a rehab center, in a halfway house or a transitional center. And the bipartisan part of it, I mean, it's a win-win. When you're talking to a certain political group and they're going money, 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 I'm like, cool. Do you know how much it costs for someone to be locked up? Yeah. So if we stop recidivism, that's how you save your money long-term. So that political side, and then the other political side that's more just focused on people anyway, both of them can agree that yes, somehow we win if we do this. And so it's very cool to see. And I'm actually excited that in a community close to my home, we're actually looking at, okay, once this passes, we'll be doing a faith-based halfway house, and that it'll actually be called The Aftermath. And the tagline will say, where rebuilding begins. And that's straight from the book. So very, very excited.
That's great. And halfway houses are needed.
Yes.
So desperately. And, you know, there's just not enough places for people to go when they come home. Where I am in Maine, they are basically released to the street with $50 in their pocket.
Right.
And they have the choice of two homeless shelters, one which is a dry shelter and one that they're still using. All kinds of services, but man, coming out of prison, that's a tough way to start out.
Yes. And yeah, you got to set these men and women up for success. And it starts with having somewhere to live. In the area I'm in, I actually work with, when I was with the hotel chain I was with, I would actually work with transitional centers to staff for laundry, housekeeping, the grounds, like in maintenance. And one of the first things I would tell these guys and ladies, I would say, listen, I don't care where you've been. I care where you are and where you're going. And it was the relief on their face, like, oh, this dude gets it. You know, it's just not like any sort of whatever. And they would end up working hard and showing what's up. But one of the transitional centers I got very angry with because they were basically like, hey, do you have somewhere to live? No? Okay, cool. This is where we're sending you when you get finished with your transitional center. And it was like an old motel, but that's where they were sending all the other former incarcerated guys. And it's like, wait, you're trying to get away from that. You're trying to start fresh and you're putting them right back where they already were. It's no different. And so like I would work with guys all the time. I'd be like, listen, I'm going to say that we need to run we tell the transitional center, of course, to do it the proper way. But I'm like, hey, I need to take this guy. We're going to Home Depot to pick up some stuff for the hotel. And then on the way back, we're stopping by this apartment and we're going to see if we can get this guy in here and writing letters of references, things like that from his employers, really helps, succeed for some of these guys. And I've had people leave South Georgia and move to, North Carolina, move to Atlanta, move to some really cool places and move their way up the ladder in their careers because, someone gave them a chance to start off with. And that's what matters. I think a lot of these people, when it comes to the workforce right now, the workforce is so horrible that you'll just, at some point you go, okay, I don't really care about your background. Show me that you can do the work. And that's one thing that moved me up very fast, very successfully was I told them, I said, hey, listen, I'm going to be real with you. I was locked up, but if you give me a chance, I'm going to show you my loyalty to you and loyalty to your business. And does that mean I had to work a little harder than maybe someone else? Yeah. Sorry. That's just how it is. But I did work a little harder, but I also thrived more than everyone else. And so that's a testament to your work ethic. Just when you get out, or if you already are out and you're listening to this, go in, find someone that will give you a chance. And then don't ruin the chance. Don't show up late to work every day. Don't get into the drama. Just come in, show up, and show out. Show them that you can do it.
One thing I have been trying to get across for 20 years is so many of the guys that I work with, when they come home, if they're supposed to be at work at 8 o'clock, they show up at 8 o'clock. And I say, that's not a good work ethic. You need to show up 10 minutes before. Get ready to be ready to start work at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
But that seems to be the hottest thing. It's like, well, I'm not getting paid yet. Well, but they're paying you for you to go grab your coffee and tie your boots and get your stuff to start your job, you know? But, you know, that's one of those things that you do have to put a little bit of extra effort in.
Right. And if you want to move up, if you don't want to just be a $9 or $9 an hour employee the rest of your life, if you do want to do that, show up at 8 o'clock. You know, if you're fine with $9 an hour, if you're fine with $10 an hour, show up at 8 o'clock for your 8 o'clock job. But if you want to be successful and go far, show up early. And then if someone needs you to stay late or someone needs you to pick up a shift, I'm not saying always pick up a shift because rest is good for your body, mentally and physically. But sometimes be available and able to help. Because I'll say this as someone who was in management for a long time now, I pay attention to that. I go, okay, well, this person wants it. They want it. And if I know they want it, I'm going to give it to them.
Well, it's good for the business. You know, if you see somebody who's a go-getter, reward that person for working and working well, you know.
Right.
That's one thing I've always thought of. You know, you see somebody that's starting to get unhappy with their job because they haven't had a raise for 2 years. Give them a raise and give them a good raise because you want to keep them there.
Yes.
It's a lot, you know. And another thing back on saving money, I'm going to circle way, way back. We were talking about saving people money by not keeping someone incarcerated. education is also cheaper than incarceration.
Yeah.
A college degree is cheaper than keeping someone in prison. So that is a good reason to educate people to get them out of there earlier, because it saves taxpayers money. And that seems to be how we get to people. You know, if you can't get to them through their heart, get through them through their pocketbook.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it comes down to, if you're hearing this right now and you're wondering, how do I spend my day other than just watching TV all day and sitting around? Ask questions. See who you can talk to. If there's like a GED program where you're locked up at, see if you can talk to them and go, hey, I've already gotten my high school education. How do I pursue something else? You don't know unless you ask. And so ask those questions. See if you can get involved and do more. I've seen prisons doing this, these podcast tours and stuff. I've seen prisons who actually have podcast prison situations, like, I don't know what to call them, but podcasts, prison organizations now, where there's like a teacher inside the prison who's allowing inmates to host a podcast. And that's awesome. See if you can do something like that. Your time is, it can be valuable while locked up. It doesn't have to just be sitting around.
You know, another thing too is a lot of the prisons are always looking for like hospice workers. And if you want a good way of giving back really feeling like you're doing something for someone else and get away from your own boo-hoo, you know, hospice is always a good way of going for those prisons that do that training.
Yes, and there's no better way to change your why me to use me than when you are being used to help someone else. You may feel like you're in a dark place, and if you are, the best way to get out of your dark place is to shine a light for someone else. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I like that. So I'm going to ask you one more question before we wrap things up. If you were just reading your book as an outsider, what's the thing that you think you would take away that stands out the most to you?
From the very first page to the very end, I want to make sure that people feel like they have hope when they finish reading this book. And something that I say all the time is, you got this, you'll get through this. And I will never forget, I was on a vacation one time and we're on the side of this mountain and it was very dangerous. Like, there's only one lane, and it was crazy, but long story short, it started raining so hard that we cannot see in front of us, behind us, or beside us. And so we just had to stop. We couldn't move because of the rain. But eventually the rain let up and we could see again and we could drive again and we could go forward again. And if you feel like your life has rain just pouring down upon you and you can't see in front of you, behind you, or beside you, I know this much, the rain will let up. You will be able to go forward again. You will be able to get to where you believe like your life should be going. In this season that you're in with incarceration or whatever other chaos you may experience, your life is not over. You still can find purpose in your pain. And I'm hoping that you'll end up taking that purpose and even making it into a platform.
Thank you so much, Noah.
Yes, thank you. It's been awesome. I appreciate you.
I want to remind our listeners that we've been talking with Noah Asher about his new book, Chaos, and there'll be links on the website and also on the tablets to his information. And of course, if anyone has any questions, they can always write me. And at the end of the show, the address will be there for you. So until next time, remember, pick up a book.
You have been listening to The Prison Pod, a podcast not just for those in prison, but for anyone who has been affected by incarceration. Ms. Valerie would love for you to write to her with your questions, comments, and show ideas. The address is Prison Pod, Post Office Box 294, Orono, Maine, 04473. Remember, reading opens doors, so pick up that book.